Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of We're Getting a Dog.
Hello.
I don't even know how to start this episode.
It's September now.
Yes, it is Labor Day while we're recording this. I actually had Labor Day off, which is strange. I usually never have Labor Day off.
It's the day to have off.
I guess, yeah.
For labor.
It's the trend.
And I finally got a new job.
Yay!
Still off for Labor Day.
Yeah.
I start orientation tomorrow.
So that's nice.
Working at Starbucks.
Starbies. Just something. It'll be in the building where I work, though.
Yeah.
So I'll get to
see
you.
Hotel.
Uh-huh. Well, anyway, we are just going to jump right to it this week, if that's good with everybody.
It's good with me.
As if they have a choice. we're going to talk this week all about the Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Mm.
So looking at them in photos and videos, they appear very muscular and alert. Though they have puppy dog eyes and a gentle disposition around their loved ones, the Rhodesian Ridgeback is a powerful and athletic dog capable of guarding its keep and hunting large prey. Yeah.
Sounds pretty fierce.
Yeah. In addition, they are not recommended for first-time dog owners as they can be a lot to handle for someone unfamiliar with training a pet. Their namesake references the ridge of fur that stands in the middle of their back, tapering down towards their tail in a long symmetrical line. We'll talk about the ridge back later.
For the ridge of fur.
Yes.
Okay, because I was a dog sitter for a Rhodesian Ridgeback. I thought it was because their spine was so prominent.
Well, that's part of it too. They do have kind of like an upward bound back, if that makes sense. Like it lifts up as it goes.
I see. Maybe it's just the dog that I sat for was very old.
Sure.
So you could see the spine through the back.
Oof, yikes. So starting on with the shape of their head and everything, the Ridgeback's head looks similar to the head of the Lab Retriever or a Dalmatian in that it makes a sort of 3D triangle with its broadest points at the top of the head. This sets the eyes somewhat far apart and they have an intelligent yet soft appearance. According to their standard, their eye color, quote, harmonizes with the dog's coloring. So that's a fun sentence. Their eyes can be either dark brown or amber colored, which sometimes corresponds with their facial coloring, which I'll get to in a second.
Right. Yeah, I can see that with the photo.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's a couple photos here. The first one is just a solid colored Rhodesian Ridgeback, which is kind of the standard you'll see. Their ears are set high on the sides of their head and are of medium size. They're wide at the base and they taper to a soft rounded point. So very much like a Labrador's ears.
Right. Yeah, but colored more like a hound, I guess.
Yeah, they are a scent and sight hound, so they are a member of the hound group. The Ridgeback's muzzle is very strong, and their lips are not droopy, but they quite fit the jaw. I don't know why I wrote it that way. With a minimal level of drooling. The nose has some specific color options, as this breed can either have a solid colored or masked face. So a mask basically means like almost like an ombre of color that coats from the nose up the muzzle. However, it is allowed, but there are some stipulations. The eyes must be masked separately, so they have to kind of look like raccoon eyes. They can't be all one piece of masking on the face. So the muzzle's masked and the eyes are masked separately.
I see, yeah, in this photo.
The coloring of the eyes must correspond to the nose coloring. So a black-nosed Ridgeback has darker colored eyes, while a brown or liver-nosed dog has amber colored eyes. Ridgebacks with masking often have darker ears as well. In the photo we have, which again, as I say in every episode, if you want to see these photos, they're in the links below. This Rhodesian Ridgeback definitely has all of those things. Darker ears, dark eyes, dark, you know, muzzle, but this is the correct way masking is done in the Rhodesian.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful chestnut color. Ridgeback.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Finally, they have a powerful jaw with a scissor bite, or at least that's what's preferred. The body is very long and capacious. They have a very deep and barrel-shaped chest that tapers up dramatically to their hindquarters.
Ooh, capacious.
Yes. They also weigh quite a bit, 85 pounds for males and 70 pounds for females. Mm. They average about 26 inches tall across both sexes. They have an overall powerful musculature and look somewhat chiseled in their muscle definition. So kind of a buff dog.
Get that rigid back.
Yeah. Their tail has a strong, flat base that thins out into a slightly upward curved medium length tail. It is not curly, though, and is not, it does not move gaily. So it's not really used as a...
It's a straight tail.
It's just a straight with a little curve at the end. Not straight down, but it has a little curve at the end.
But not gay.
But not gay.
Straight as can be.
Yeah. Its color is wheaten. It's like, well, wheaten. Let's see if you said that before on the show. The shades so range... White. No, it's wheat.
White like Will Wheaton.
The shades range from light wheat to red, and a small amount of white on the chest and toes are permissible. The defining feature is the ridge, which is the namesake of the breed, and it is a clearly defined part of the breed's fur pattern on their back. There is another photo of that here where you can clearly see what we're talking about. So it's a literal ridge of fur that grows in different directions on their back.
So it sort of emphasizes the spine.
Yes, and it consists of two different crowns of fur growing together. One is usually a little bit longer and thinner than the other, and it tapers from their back past their neck, or it starts like just past their neck on their back, and it goes down to more than two-thirds in a symmetrical line. So you can see in this picture, one's a little bit longer. That's pretty common. But yeah, that's the signature look. It grows naturally that way.
Makes it sort of the Stegosaurus of dogs.
Sure, except Stegosaurus, that was scales.
It's a ridge back,
I guess.
And then, closest you're going to get.
Yeah, and then finally we have the bark of the Rhodesian Ridgeback. So it's pretty big and powerful, I will say.
Makes sense. Big dog. You see coyotes? That's tough.
Oh, yeah.
Getting those coyotes out.
Getting coyotes. They're actually pretty handy for getting coyotes. Oh. We'll talk about that later in the episode. But that's their bark. Pretty, you know, alert bark for sure.
Yeah.
But... yeah, that's the basics of the Rhodesian Ridgeback. That's just the breed standard.
Yeah, seems like a fairly generic large dog. I'm interested in what their history is.
Their history is rather interesting. It's not the longest I've ever seen because there's lots of bits and pieces that we don't really know for sure. But it's still interesting for what it is.
Yeah, well, I remember they were the most, I don't know, genetically similar to older breeds of some kind. I don't know.
You're in the ballpark. We're going to get to that in the history for sure.
Yeah, I forget what breed we were covering when we...
The Scholowitz Queenly.
Oh, the Scholowitz Queenly, yes.
Yes, but we're going to get to that in a second. We have to take a break first, though.
Okay. Okay. Take that break.
Hello, listeners. Wesley here to talk to you a little bit about how you can support this show. For each episode of all of our podcasts here at Arcadia, we spend our own money on books, articles, and other materials so that we can bring you podcasts that are thoroughly researched and fact-checked. All of the hosts and producers of these shows also work full-time jobs in addition to the podcast so that we can support this passion we all share. If you'd like to support us at We're Getting a Dog, as well as the other podcasts in the Arcadia Podcast Network, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/We're Getting a Dog or our website, WeGettingADog.com/support. For as low as $2 per month, you can get access a day early to every new episode of We're Getting a Dog and other Arcadia Podcast Network shows, such as Coffee's On and Good Food for Bad Friends. And at higher levels, you can get one-of-a-kind swag. Thank you for supporting the Arcadia Podcast Network and for listening to this podcast. Now back to the show. All right, we are back with the history of the Rhodesian Ridgeback.
All right.
So they originated in southern Africa.
Rhodesia?
Well, yes, which is modern-day Zimbabwe. So, yeah. Almost all credible sources I found mention that the Rhodesian Ridgeback was not traceable in origin due to a lack of records being kept by the nomadic tribes of Africa. That being said, the official, quote-unquote, record begins with the Dutch establishing the refueling station at the Cape of Good Hope in the 1650s. There is some record, though, that the tribes of southern Africa kept you know, the ancient Rhodesian Ridgeback. So we're going to go to the pre-colonial era, which I don't know if I've ever titled a section of this pre-colonialism, but that was kind of fun.
Well, yeah, cool.
The Rhodesian Ridgeback is known to have been used primarily as a guard and hunting dog. They weren't just any hunting dog, though, as they were used for hunting ferocious animals such as lions, cheetahs, and baboons.
Wow.
They're also noted as having great loyalty to their masters and family, which was a good thing for groups of people that were always moving to the next spot to settle for a while. Hmm. So, you know, it's good to have a loyal dog, because if you're nomadic, you're going to be going everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
The Khoisan were the tribe that had these dogs, and they were a nomadic people who traveled through the regions of Tanzania, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. Some regions were known at that time as Rhodesia, though, which is where the name comes from.
Right.
They were traveling southward from Zimbabwe when they encountered the Dutch, who had established the Cape of Good Hope. The Dutch, not then bothered to attempt learning how to use their language, called them the Hottentots, which is now a term that's deemed racist and offensive. But that's where
I'd watch out for the Dutch at that time.
That's the pretty bad. But that's where that word came from, Hottentot. It's used in other things you see in, like, you know,
that's not
racist
where tater
culture.
Tots come from. Is
no,
it?
I hope not. I think it's called that because they're little potatoes. They're not big potatoes like tater tots.
I mean, that sounds pretty similar.
I don't know. The Khoisan, this is their actual name. They were also a pastoralist nomadic tribe, meaning that they traveled with domesticated cattle and sheep. So that was what they used for, like, food and leather, or not maybe not leather, but at least animal skin and wool from sheep and stuff like that, along with their dogs. We have sufficient evidence that the Khoisan had ancient Rhodesian Ridgebacks thanks to several rock paintings. One is in Erongo in Namibia, and another that I have a photo of is titled Diana's Vow, and that is in Zimbabwe.
Hmm.
But either way, it's okay. This is a copy that's been made, so you can clearly see, but...
Where's the dog?
The dog, you have to look for it. It's... So you know where the center fold is?
Yeah.
Just go down a little bit. That's the dog.
Okay, it looks like a baby deer.
It kind of does, but that's the dog.
I'm not convinced it's a purebred Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Okay, well, it's not like...
Any of these, like, cave paintings or rock paintings, I guess, whatever this is, they're not that convincing.
There's also artist interpretation. Anyway, that being said, the Rhodesian Ridgeback is one of the very few dog breeds proven to have pre-colonialist DNA in their lines. In other words, this dog has been around in some form probably centuries before the Dutch arrived in 1652. Now, when the Dutch saw them, they were really impressed by the dog, and their policy when encountering oppressive local animals was to cross them with their own European breeding stock to, quote, improve them as necessary.
To be fair, the Dutch are easily impressed. I mean, tulips,
just
wow.
Just my people. I'm Dutch. My last name is Van Hoosen.
Tulips, they're pretty great.
Wow. So. Okay, anyway, there are some possibilities as to what breeds the Dutch may have used. It could be the Great Dane, the Boer Bull, and the Greyhound. Those three breeds do appear in the Ridgeback's DNA line. Or there's, like, striking similarities, I guess, in their DNA, enough to be traced. They viewed crossing European breeds into the local dog breeds as an easier option than trying to establish a European dog breed outright in an unfamiliar territory. That kind of makes sense, but it's also kind of terrible. The Dutch called these proto-Ridgebacks the Boer Hond or Farmhound once they had introduced their stock into the lines, and possibly after seeing that they were used to guard the family farms and animals. So, like, for the tribes. The notion of having these dogs bay and kill lions was officially recorded in the 1870s. Now, it's probably, they probably did killed large animals before, but this is when a breeder specifically was like, no, I wanted to kill lions. So a man named Charles Helm brought two female Boer Hunds, or farmhounds, with him, named Powder and Lorna, to the Hope Fountain Mission in Matabele, which is in Zimbabwe. While he was there, a local farmer named Cornelis van Rooyen saw his dogs and was so impressed, again, super impressed, pretty easily impressed, I guess, that he asked Helm if he could have his hunting dogs sire the two female, like, pre-Ridgebacks or whatever.
Yeah.
Helm agreed, and the combination produced red-colored dogs with visible ridges in the fur on their back. Over the next 35 years, Van Rooyen continued to selectively breed his dogs until he had bred a pack that could naturally sense and challenge a lion, which kind of is crazy to me that that's, like, the thing he really wanted to accomplish.
Yeah. Like lion hounds.
They're called lion dogs.
Lion dogs.
Yeah, that's another name for them. The next step of the Rhodesian Ridgeback's history comes from a dog breeder and enthusiast from Mashonaland, Zimbabwe. I hope I'm saying that correctly. His name was Francis Barnes. He founded a kennel in 1898, but then he decided to leave Mashonaland in 1910 for Bulawayo, which was a then growing city. He came across the Rhodesian Ridgeback there and eventually got two for himself. However, he noticed there was a rather alarming need for a breed standard. He gathered six other breed enthusiasts and formed the Rhodesian Ridgeback or Lion Dog Club. This is in South Africa in 1922, and published a standard shortly thereafter. This is in Zimbabwe, but it was recognized by the South African Kennel Club.
So the name was still up in the air. They could have gone with Lion Dog.
Yeah, but this is when they were first called like officially Rhodesian Ridgebacks, because there
Lion
was the
dogs there's, better.
I guess, yeah. It's since been admitted that the standard was mostly copied from the Dutch standard for the Dalmatian, with changes being made appropriately to match the look of the Rhodesian Ridgeback. However,
Less spots.
Yeah, no spots, yeah. Regardless, the Ridgeback was accepted by the South African Kennel Union in 1924, and the breed won its first championship there in 1928. The noted popularity in South Africa led to exports of the breed all over the rest of Southern Africa. And then by the next decade, most farms in Southern Africa kept Rhodesian Ridgebacks as guard and hunting dogs.
Everyone needs a lion dog.
I guess.
As long as there's lions around.
They became super popular, yeah. Now they come to America. So in World War II, they had other things that they hunted here, though. World War II took a lot of soldiers to Africa where they encountered this dog as well. And as a result, many of them brought these dogs back home with them to America, where they quickly became known. The first Rhodesian Ridgeback kennel in America was the Red House Kennel in Arizona, and that was founded by Bill and Seda O'Brien. They also spearheaded the founding of the Rhodesian Ridgeback Club of America in the early 1950s, which sought to get the breed recognized by the AKC and to also have a stud book established. The AKC accepted the breed in 1955, but in a turn of events, they would not use Rhodesian Ridgeback Club of America as the breed's sponsoring parent club.
Why not?
There was a weird rule back then. In order to do shows for your breed, your club had to be established in a city that had a lot of that kind of breed registered there. So in Arizona, there wasn't a huge number.
There weren't many people in Arizona yet.
I guess, yeah. So then the O'Briens didn't really know what to do, I guess, because it kind of stops talking about them for a minute. So other really important people in the breed community, they formed the Rhodesian Ridgeback Club of the United States, or the RRCUS, and then incorporated the old club in 1959. They established headquarters in San Diego, where there was a really big population of Rhodesian Ridgeback, so the AKC allowed them to go forward there. Yes. And the main areas for this breed in America at the time were California, New England, and then again, the O'Briens in Arizona were a really big influence, too. After they were allowed to do shows, they grew in popularity pretty steadily over the next few decades. The O'Briens remained one of the dominating forces within the Rhodesian Ridgeback breeding community up until the 1980s. But it said something that their dog sired something over like 700 dogs over a span of 50 years for the breed, which is pretty crazy. Yeah. Though they have never won best in show in the AKC, they are currently ranked as the 41st most registered breed. So pretty decent number for, you know, having a sort of niche use by for hunting lions, and then just be kind of, they became really popular here. But we're going to get to why they became really popular in the United States.
Yeah, I was just wondering
their training.
That.
Yeah, there's reasons. But what do you think so far? That's all their history. It's a pretty straightforward history, just because a lot of it's not cited until the Dutch arrive, and which was the 17th century.
So. Yeah, interesting dog. Very kind of unique origin.
Definitely.
For such a popular breed.
Yes, and I think it's quite interesting. It is a matter of the war having men stationed in southern Africa,
right,
that ended up causing them to go become more popular. And they weren't necessarily directly affected in breeding numbers because there wasn't, you know, a lot of devastation at the stations in Africa. Does that make sense? It's just kind of an interesting pivot as to what we usually see, which is all kennels closed because of the World War II.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, we'll get to their training here in a second, which is why you'll see, why they're popular here for their training.
Good for training.
Yes, absolutely. But we're going to take another break. And then another we'll be right
break.
Back. Yes. We'll be right back. All right. We are back now with ownership and training of the Rhodesian Ridgeback. So they are considered of average intelligence. They rank at number 52 on Stanley Coren's list, but they are of very great strength and loyalty. After all, they're known to fight fast and large African animals. So,
like lions.
This has led them to have great use for farms that have problems with cougars, bobcats, deer, or even wild boar and bears.
Or lions?
Lions are not native to the United States. This is the United States.
Or tigers or bears, oh my.
Okay. They're described as independently loyal, so they may want to do their own thing, which you should respect as their owner. Don't force them into something they don't want to do.
I can respect that.
They do very well with families and young children, which I thought was really interesting considering their size, but they're very good with kids.
Yeah, nice.
Though they're not always good with other dog breeds.
Oh, might think they're a lion.
No. God. Oh, my God. Because they are so prey-driven, off-leash training is not recommended for this breed, and it is imperative to make sure that they are well-leash trained and socialized at an early age. Staying firm but respectful will keep their attention during a reward-based training session, which should not last more than a half an hour. And then punishing a dog of this breed, as of any other breed, will only inspire rebellion and a lack of interest.
Yeah.
Besides the basic training and natural trainable instincts for hunting, Rhodesian Ridgebacks can also be trained in specialty courses like luring, racing, and agility. And finally, they need at least 2 hours of exercise every day. So, pretty demanding dog for exercise. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like it needs to be a very active breed.
Uh-huh. And when it comes to owning this breed, there are only a couple of common health concerns, which is elbow and hip dysplasia. And actually, on their website, the National Breed Club recommends doing joint evaluations if you have a Rhodesian Ridgeback. There are veterinary offices that will do that. Mm. And then hypothyroidism and occasional deafness. So, that's really it. A weekly brushing to decrease excess shedding, and a bath once a month, and trim their nails as necessary.
Yeah, their coat looks pretty low maintenance.
Very low maintenance, yeah. When it comes to finding a Rhodesian Ridgeback, the RRCUS website has breeder and breed rescue resources you can check out. And finally, and this is the last bit I have, is their lifespan, which is 12 to 15 years.
Oh, wow.
So for a big dog, it's a very good lifespan.
Yeah, definitely.
But otherwise, yeah, very, you know, very old breed for sure. But that's all I've got. Pretty quick dog breed, I have to say. I had to double check to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, pretty quick history for such an old breed.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, you know, a lot of, they probably existed for centuries, but they were with nomadic tribes.
Right.
And so there wasn't like, you know, established cities where records are being kept, really. Yeah. So until the Dutch arrived. So.
Yeah, but it's interesting. They're still, I don't know, such genetically old.
Yeah, for sure.
I forget. Do you remember what study it was that Rhodesian Ridgebacks were at the top of?
Like,
Cholas Quaintlys were second with Chihuahuas.
Yeah, I don't remember. I found the study because it directly mentioned those two as well. But it did say that the Rhodesian Ridgeback had more. It was one of, I think it was the most or the second most, like it had of original blood type from pre-colonialist crossing. So it was like it was had older blood in it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I think it was breeds that were most different from basically just other like main European breeds.
Yes. Like they had DNA that was not present in any European breeds. So that meant it was native to where the areas that they were from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Rhodesian Ridgeback more from Africa and Cholas Quaintly more from Yeah, Americas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I really think if I had a farm or like a little ranch, I would totally want one of these dogs.
Yeah.
I mean,
very cool breed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And very, it's nice that they're really good with families, too. Because that's something with big dogs. I think there's a really big fear there that they're not going to get along with a family. But I saw so many pictures of these huge Rhodesian Ridgeback dogs, and they're just nestled next to like a toddler, just like, hey, you know. So they're definitely really valued as a family dog in America as well, and yeah, probably all over the world.
Yeah, it's proud of the weather. So popular, too.
Definitely. That's all I've got, though. So is it time for dog news?
Dog news.
Here we go.
It's time to meet Cass.
Okay. Like Mama Cass?
This is an article coming from WTHR in Indianapolis.
Oh, just around the bend here.
Yeah. Cass is the new VP of happiness at Roncalli High School.
Ooh.
So, Roncalli High School is treating its students with a particularly good boy who has worked exceptionally hard to be named the school's first facility dog.
What does that entail? I get it.
It entails being the vice president of happiness. So, Cass, the 2-year-old black lab from the Indiana Canine Assistant Network, had to complete extensive training to earn the certification of facility dog, including a temperament test, formal obedience and service work, and multiple public access tests.
That's pretty cool.
And Cass, so cute.
He's very cute. I wish we had a lab that just went around and made students happy. We did have a therapy dog
when at your school?
At my school.
At high school?
Uh-huh.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Just for the whole school?
Yeah.
Oh, damn, that's amazing.
They had it in the counseling office, yeah.
Wow, just hanging out in the counseling office all day, though.
I forget what her name was. It was like Squiggles, I think. Yeah, her name was Squiggles.
That's a better name than Cass.
I'm pretty sure it's a little white Bichon Frise.
Aw. Yeah. Well, labs are bigger, better dogs.
I mean, I'm not...
More therapy for more poundage.
I honestly think beagles are probably some of the best therapy dogs because they're so dang cute.
St. Bernards, they're the biggest, most therapy.
They're cute too.
The therapy, but, yeah, 5 kids at once.
Well, that's cool. I like that they have a vice president of happiness.
So yeah, Cass had his first day in August, and since then this article says he's really flourished in his role as VP of happiness.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I bet it's so rewarding to be a dog that just gets to go to a school and make people happy all day.
Oh, yeah. It says, every day he attends class with the Life Academy students, listening while they read to him or working with them while they practice life skills. He occasionally works with other school counselors, social workers, and STARS teachers.
Nice.
Yeah. It's such a nice, you know, idea.
Definitely.
For more dogs for working in public places.
Yeah, absolutely.
Therapy dogs all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone, that is this week's episode of We're Getting a Dog, and we're already just getting into this season, which is so crazy. We will be back next week with Dylan's next breed,
yeah,
which I don't know what it is. And remember, everyone, this breed was picked by a listener. This is from a very close friend of mine, Brandon, who actually just visited us here in Chicago.
Yeah,
to watch the new Lord of the Rings show, which I like, so everyone can have their feelings on it, but it's I liked it. But either way, thanks, Brandon, for suggesting this breed to us. And Dylan, why don't you take us out?
Remember to help your local shelters any way you can, whether that's donating, volunteering, fostering, or adopting. And remember to help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Wesley Van Hoosen and Dylan Naylor are not pet professionals. Any advice regarding pet ownership and the responsibilities thereof taken from this program should be checked with your veterinarian. All episodes are researched thoroughly, fact-checked, and additionally researched during post-production. Annotated bibliographies of every episode can be found at weregettingadog.com/bibliographies.
This podcast is hosted by Dylan Naylor and Wesley Van Hoosen. If you'd like to reach out or submit a photo of your dog to be featured on our social media, please contact us at WGAD@ArcadiaPodcastNetwork.com or on our Instagram at We're Getting a Dog. Thank you for listening to We're Getting a Dog from the Arcadia Podcast Network.